Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, joined as always by my fellow Strandees here on City Alpha in the future. Well, actually, wait, we're not in the future yet. So Philip and Daniel, remember back into the past, into Stardate 1051.8. How is that week going? How's it been?
I was never that young. So... recently, I know listeners can't see this, I was on Amazon, as one is wont to do. I was getting a new iPad cord. But anyway, every time I buy something on Amazon, I'm always tempted to buy just a second thing for me, because usually I'm buying a necessity. So I'm like, it's something cheap. So for whatever reason, I stumbled upon a new-to-me Star Trek comm badge. It's like QX, is that what it's called? QMQX? Something like that. But anyway.
Sure.
Yeah, the big thing is like it's not a big thing, but it's a magnetic back, which I mean, I'm sure that's not unique. But I'll admit all the other comm badges, both TNG and what we'll call Voyager, are all pins. So maybe I have one magnet. But anyway, it was fairly inexpensive, so I bought myself a new Voyager era, DS9 era, whatever you want to use to describe that, comm badge. And it's funny because it's actually a bit smaller than I think the other ones I have, which is not to say it's not quote-unquote accurate, but it's funny just because the magnet is shape-specific, and it's a lot lighter than the other ones I own. It is kind of, when I just picked it up, I was like, wow, it's like a little, is that what a comm badge would be like in, quote-unquote real life? It's like this very light, and anyway, I just thought that was cool.
That's very cool. Yeah, no, comm badges are always cool to have. Whether or not they have pips on them, that's a topic for another time.
Well, one other costume or cosplay challenge is, I will not go into my experience, but long story short, I bought and I've probably talked about this before, but I bought the First Contact or DS9 undershirt uniform from Anovos, or however you pronounce
it. Okay, Anovos.
So I got the Data Gold. For that. So now, unless I just want to wear a t-shirt and looks weird. Now I want the First Contact / DS9, jumpsuit or whatever you call it. Because Anubis is out of stock. Of course, it'd be like $1 million, but whatever. They'd have payment plans. But anyway, outside of that, I don't know any other options of where to find them. I know there's like varying degrees of quality. I know they make that uniform in what I will call like a Halloween costume kind of cosplay, but that's like, if I'm going to invest, I want it to be nice. So I don't know. So any listeners that have, unless they just want to sew it for me and I'll, pay for it. I'm looking for a First Contact DS9 sort of whatever you call that jumpsuit, or even if it's just a top and you have to do the pants separately, whatever. But that's always been sort of the Star Trek cosplay I've always wanted to do. That First Contact look. And so I actually, Anovos gave me the sleeves, for lack of a better word. They're supposed to zip on to the top.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, whatever. So that's my current quest.
I always thought that was a really interesting way for them to do that, where you just have zipper sleeves, so it's easy to make one garment and then you just add the appropriate striping. I mean, it's clever.
Yeah.
It's just, it's interesting.
I don't mind, obviously, you want to go for screen accurate, but like for the undershirt, is actually a zipper, like it zips instead of a pullover. But and so the zipper, is visible as a zipper, but it's color, so it's not like it's like the silver zipper. So
just make sure that comm badge doesn't get too high, Philip, because that's a cardinal sin.
I know. So. I want to freak Daniel out.
Daniel, any comm badges in your life?
I only own one, and it's the JJ one. Science JJ one.
Science.
Okay. I don't own any other ones. Actually, how much did you pay for that, Philip? I'm curious, because I would definitely pick one up.
Under 20. I mean, I know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't anything crazy. I'm not going to,
Now, you guys know by giving more of your personal preference data to Amazon.com that control is only mere moments from gaining sentience.
Yeah, I wouldn't want Amazon to be sentient, you know.
You know, it's drone army. I mean, I don't but yeah, no.
Well,
no.
Darren, I know, blah, blah, Star Wars. So how are you feeling about that?
Oh, it's been fun watching all the Star Wars news from the convention this weekend is going on in Chicago. I'm not missing the snow that's apparently happening today, but they chose to go to Chicago, so that's on them. But yeah, no, it looks like a lot of fun, a lot of cool things announced. I really wish I was there, but again, another year I will wait around for it to come back to LA in sunny, sunny California.
Darren and I were talking about this before you popped on, Philip, but for the first time in a long time, like I've kind of fallen off the Star Wars bandwagon since the movies and stuff. And I got excited about the new game that's coming out for the first time.
Oh yes,
in a long time.
Fallen Jedi, where you are a Jedi with no microtransactions. That's exactly what the tagline says.
We'll see how it goes. You know, we're a long way out, but I'm down for a good Star Wars game.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
I was actually reading. Believe it or not, I do Star Trek stuff occasionally. I read. I can't remember the exact title of the book, but it was sort of a quote unquote. A scholarly academic collection of articles on Star Trek. I don't know, go to my Goodreads, you'll find the review. But anyway, it's like 75% scholarly articles, which were not great in my opinion. But in the last tenth of the book, there's these articles, but they're actually not very scholarly. They're just sort of like articles. And two of them were about game development. And one was a gentleman who worked on Elite Force. And it was actually very fascinating and very interesting because he actually said they were working on a next gen game, and he talked a little bit about the concept. But then they came and said, "No, no, no, we want to do a Voyager one." He's like, "Oh," yeah. But anyway, of course, you know. Then as the story goes, I mean, he's like, "Elite Four is like the best game," blah, 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 which I don't disagree. But it was sort of very interesting to kind of read all that stuff about game development.
That's really cool. Yeah, I'm actually also a quarter of the way through Dayton Ward's newest book, which just dropped, Available Light. So it's a next-gen book continuing on the adventures of Picard and all of them in the Enterprise-E era. And it's kind of jumping back and forth between two main plot lines. The Enterprise is out in the Odyssean Pass, you know, discovering new amazing things. But back on Earth, a reporter has uncovered and unveiled the existence and widespread influence of Section 31, and heads are rolling.
You know me, Darren. I love a good Section
31. I know you love
Section
31. I know. You're ready to pick this up.
Did they pull out their retro? Did they discover their retro com badges that they had 200 years too early?
You know,
or whatever?
It's more fun to see who they're saying are super connected, because it's always those badmirals or admirals who are like, anyone who went against our favorite crew is now like a secret Section 31
Captain
collaborator.
Jellicoe, or, you know.
Oh, Jellicoe, Ross, Nechayev.
Well, we knew Ross was somewhat compromised based on that one episode, but yeah.
So it's Nakamura. Oh. Pretty much any admiral who ever visited the Enterprise D, it does not go in well. But so that's interesting to say.
Enjoy. You know, so here's not the people don't write for me. I know. You got to write for yourself. But a Section 31 story, you know, in the 24th/25th century. I want the Winter Soldier edition, where it's Hail Hydra and, you know, Starfleet falls and they have to rebuild it because the Section 31's actually been Hydra the whole time. So, you know.
I mean, this isn't that far off from that. I mean, it's very widespread, and the general populace is kind of, like, freaking a little bit that, you know, their way of life has been influenced by this organization for so long. But
I would like to see a well-written Captain Picard Section 31 story, only because of the way I imagine Picard would respond to Section 31. He'd get lots of sorts of speeches. He'd get to yell at them, and to be really Captain Picardy, that'd be pretty cool.
Well,
he's kind of
in trouble too, because apparently he was cursorily involved in the removal of the Federation president, who was basically like breaking the Kittimer Accord and risking everything during the Dominion War. And while Picard was involved in removing him from office, Picard didn't realize then that Section 31 operatives then killed him. So Picard's kind of, his name is being sullied a little bit, so it's going to be an interesting ride.
You know, it'll be interesting, you know, and if you...
And we get Philippa, not Philippa, Louvois.
Captain Philippa.
Captain Philippa.
Yeah. Louvois?
I can't remember. Louvois, yeah. Is also in this, still JAG.
And still, I don't know how to say horny nicely.
fiery?
Yeah. Well, she has it. Yeah, sure. Fiery.
Hot for Jean-Luc. Is she a
Spunky?
Luxwana
Troy? I know. She seems to be very much no exceptions to the we're going after Section 1 collaborators. So it's going to be an interesting ride.
So, I mean, and I think you can have alternate universes in your head. I mean, you're Star Wars fans, you all know about that now. But, you know, when the Picard series happens, and inevitably the backstory of, you know, where he is in that time in the early 25th century and what he's been doing will sort of, I guess, invalidate most, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that, too, while I was listening to this. And it's like, but I don't have any expectation that they're going to rely on anything that's been written in these books. I mean, even the newer Discovery era books are kind of like 90% there. Yeah,
season two. I mean,
if they really want to do extra bits, they're doing them in short treks. So,
yeah.
Speaking of,
which are now super relevant, like even more so than we expected, because we get to see our favorite queen and. Now, what do you guys think? Did they add enough context in this episode? Or was it literally like, if you didn't watch this episode...
If you can't be bothered, we're not going to be bothered. I mean, I think...
Apparently.
Did you go back and watch all the short treks, Darren? Because I know that
you
had missed them.
I did, yeah.
Because right. I was going to ask you. You'd be the one to know.
No, it was... I mean, it was good. I think it was cool because... I think they gave enough... of kind of the queen's backstory, but in some ways, even if you didn't remember the short trek as much or you hadn't seen it at all, you were kind of just the point of view of the rest of the crew who had no idea, and you were just kind of going
along. You were like Captain
and so
Pike
it kind of worked
going I guess we're skipping the diplomatic introductions.
Yeah. He's like, you're really casual with this queen. But with Poe, is it?
Yes,
Poe. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay, well, let's dig in here, guys. We got a lot to talk about because this is Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1.
The penultimate episode of Season 2.
Yes, exactly. And as we've discovered that the last episode is going to be Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, the first two-parter of Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Yes, just revealed by, at least I'm assuming Memory Alpha is correct, but it is showing... the next one as a Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. But again, they don't put the titles on the episodes, so they can kind of get away with that. All right, so we have things to do, guys. We got to evacuate the ship. The order's been given. We're going to extend these really long, spindly, ka-chink, ka-chink, ka-chink. And the way I read it is, okay, the Discovery or the Crossfield class designers sitting down like, guys, okay, we put this giant triangle wedge at the bottom of the ship. So what if we have to evacuate the ship? Hey, God, Bill, it's okay. Standard Starfleet protocols, we have to come to them. So we can't expect any other ship to try to reach over such a large, you know, horizontal plane. We're just going to have to build expanding bridges, four of them.
Two bridges?
You know, yeah, four bridges that reaches just shy over, and then, you know, We'll dock up. I thought they were just going to dock on the saucer. That makes sense to Darren, but I guess, you know.
The part that sticks the furthest out.
You know, the part that sticks the furthest out. But,
I'm imagining the sort of infamous meme of the people in the meeting of, like, you know, like, and sort of like, how are we going to dock a Constitution at Crossfield? And it's like.
Like,
really?
They have the two Eagle Moss models, and they're like, they're trying to put them together. Guys, we got a problem.
Someone's like, oh, we'll do, like, a really long bridge. And, like, yeah, it'll be, like, holographic force. Field and third person's like, or you could just turn the ships upside down where the bottom fits the bottom and there's actually no problem fitting
or saucer
together.
To saucer
and then that person gets thrown out the window and then that's
So I spend not a lot of time on Twitter, but I actually happened to hop on there just a little while
hashtag
ago
bridge selection.
And somebody had retweeted, and I must have been like who I assume is like the Mike Okuda of the production team.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Because he was like, I designed the interface that Detmer was using during the docking sequence, and I had to give them my version 3 months early because we still hadn't figured out how they were going to dock together. And I'm like, oh,
so that's
man,
why
yeah.
All she's saying is we're lighting up and we're at station keeping. We did it. Good job, guys. You know. So later they would do this visual effects to connect them. Well, what would you guys have done for the connection if you could have designed it?
Well, I mean, it was one of the design is not, because Darren, I know that's usually you, and Daniel, to a certain extent, you. It's just, you know, the things don't throw me off. Like, you know, we'll talk about the Enterprise Bridge or whatever. Like, it's not going to drive me crazy. But I guess what drove me crazy about the connection is not that there was a connection. Like, if they had sort of had some, like, thing where it sort of extended out. But the kind of cartoony, like, this comes out, and this comes out, and this folds, 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 folds. I'm like, how did that fit together? Like, it's so transformy, you know, Transformers.
It is very transformy.
I mean, and again, I'm, you know, whatever. There were other things in the episode, you know, I'm not going to concentrate on that. Though, obviously, I do see the design. Like, I saw people like, oh, why can't you use transporters? Which I think you should. You should have cargo transporters. But I get, you know, there could be reasons. During an evacuation, you'd have, you know, some docking, and I get it. And the saucer obviously makes more sense. But it's just so cartoony looking. And then with the force fields, you know, it sort of begs, like, everyone's waiting for them to fail and someone gets sucked out into space, you know. But whatever. It was just one of those cartoony things. I'm like, what? Okay, whatever.
I half liked it. I like the idea that they have to dock. My biggest problem is... and I don't think I've talked about this since very early on. God, how ugly Discovery is. Now that they put it next to the Enterprise, and it's like, oh my God.
Look, they only,
like,
built
okay.
a few of them, then Spore Drive went bust, and now we're going to send it to the future, so it doesn't really matter.
Well,
anymore.
Like, I guess I never thought about that, because again, I'm not going to go crazy in design, but I know y'all will, so that's why I bring it up. I guess I never realized how, and I know surface area is different than volume. I can never say that word correctly. But anyway, obviously the Enterprise inside is bigger. But I didn't realize how big the Discovery was, bigger than the Enterprise. You know, I mean, that thing is, like, massively, like, if you put one over the other, like, as they did, because I could see them together, it's, like, 1.5, I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but 1.5 larger, like, surface area than the Enterprise. Well, surface is the wrong term, but you know what I mean. Bigger. It's wider. It's tall, you know, than... Because I know it's flatter than the Enterprise, but yeah. It was just so, like, that's a really big ship. Like, that's for the 23rd century.
Well, the saucer disk of the Discovery is smaller radius than the Enterprise, but... And I think the thing where it makes up the volume is that wedge, is that triangle underneath, because that's pretty beefy. Like, I mean, it's the whole height of the cargo bay, which is at least two decks high. So two decks high in that entire area, minus, you know, mechanical stuff. You know, they have room for all those science labs. So
I
know what would solve this, guys,
them?
Would
just
be
them?
This
bet,
thing.
Anyway,
all we need is a technical manual, guys. I mean, that's, or a blueprint, something. But, you know, this is Star Trek, so why would we get that? So, okay, so we're evacuating, guys, and it was cool. I mean, I liked when they got on the Enterprise and, the hallways are all crowded and you see, like, you know, the Enterprise uniforms and the Discovery uniforms meshing and everyone's working well together. Like, that was really cool, those visual shots on the trapezoidal Enterprise. We love
hexagons, like hallways for days. But hey, it looks good. It, you know, it's a nice design. So yeah, so we're evacuating. You know, and we got to make the choice. We got to figure out, you know, what are we doing with the time crystal?
Well, one thing, and again, I'm not trying to go straight in with Discovery bashing at all, but this is a genuine question for y'all. Well, I think I know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. I get that this episode is starting with, you know, as you just said, Darren, you know, oh, we're going to blow up the ship, and, you know, that's what we're leading up to in the first 10 or 15 minutes, we're going to blow up the ship.
That's what they said at the end of last episode.
Right, but so. I didn't feel any of the urge. Like, for some reason, I'm like, it's not going to blow up. And I don't know if whether it's because...
You can't make that play. I mean, what's this thing? I'm like, it's like the writer saying in mid-season, oh, we're going to kill Picard. Like, that's just not going to happen. You're not going to blow up the Discovery.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because I'm just a jaded viewer who doesn't like the show. I'll allow that. Maybe that's why I'm thinking that. Or is it because they showed me a short trek called Calypso that I've seen that ship still exists? I mean, and, you know, and I'm not trying to be smart, but, like, you know, I'm just logical
knowledge.
If
Commander Data taught us anything, you want to blow up a ship, you stand next to the warp core and you shoot a phaser at it. Until, I mean, I'm pretty sure the computer can't override that.
Yeah, there's all this, it's good, objectively, I guess, that, you know, everyone's, you know, saying goodbye, and they're writing their, but anyway.
Wait, this is just like the binaries, guys.
But yeah, so it seemed like a little...
We're going to evacuate, and then the ship's just going to fly itself off, and we're going to be like, what? Is it going to Binus? You know.
Well, it's just frustrating because you watch this beginning scene... And it undoes itself within 5 minutes of the episode. We're like, okay, let's all go across the bridges.
Although,
all right, we're all coming
granted,
back.
It's like if you think about it, it actually does make sense because the bulk of the crew are off now. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier than to take the next logical jump of we're going to have this core group stay on the ship and follow her through time rather than, and we also have to evacuate 90% of the crew because that's already done.
But I
don't think they ever come back.
Another thought, and again, I'm not going to berate it. I'll get over it. There's more in this episode. But, like, you know, fire torpedoes, Jun-Jun, shields up. Fire again, Jun-Jun. Well, guess that's it. As we all know, shields are indestructible. If we get firing, nothing would happen.
One starship is unable to defeat another. It's our Achilles heel, you know.
I was thinking, Pike has never played a Star Trek video game because you always take down the shields with the phasers. Then you shoot the torpedoes. Come on, man.
Because I remember in TOS, those shields were crappy. So, I didn't know they had some great ones right before that. So,
yeah, it's like, and the thing, too, that bothered
me
was...
Or go back onto the ship and literally, like, pull out the hardware for the shield.
You know, there's a lot of hardware. I had the hardware discussion last week. Anyway.
No, it's the silliest thing because they're constantly... problem solving themselves into the issue. They're like, first of all, they have a ship that can go anywhere. You would think that would be useful in all these
no,
types
Dan,
of scenarios.
No, Dan, obviously Leland will find us eventually, even if we jump across the galaxy. Then it's only a matter of 75 years until he catches up with us. I mean, that's obviously not a realistic plan, Daniel.
I don't understand, man.
I didn't think about this during the episode, so, you know, sometimes I live in blissful ignorance. But I was reading a Trek Core review of this episode, and I didn't even think about this, honestly. But, like, they're like, so, it takes Leland and Section 31, well, however long, well, I'll just say, like, 2 hours to show up. But yeah. Sarek and Amanda, boom, from Vulcan like that. Oh. And I was like, oh, I did
look,
not
they
think
were
about
just
that.
On a holiday cruise, popped by for a visit, and,
never,
yeah, I think
not
someone...
only...
You're never right.
Not only... the beginning, the opening scene of the episode is Sarek has some vision, which, okay, I guess they've established that. Whatever, he has some sort of psychic link with Michael.
His Katra, Katranet.
Whatever. Let's assume that in the beginning of the episode, Sarek takes off and tries to head towards the Discovery. Right. And then...
We're right next to Vulcan, guys. Obviously, it's right there. Totally
but
can see
Discovery
it.
But then Discovery disappears and goes somewhere else. And they're on this tiny little shuttlecraft. How do they even know where to go? Oh, my God. And then they just show up, and it's amazing, and then they just leave. Like, what
didn't
is
we
happening?
Have, didn't we have friends in the group chat where they're like, wasn't that all a vision? Were they actually there? And they were like, yeah, they were actually there because we see their shuttle leaving before the battle starts.
And
it's also weird.
But you know what? It's okay because they were leaving to send a message to Starfleet that there was a problem, because obviously that's what they were doing, because we can't communicate with Starfleet right now, but I'm surely this Vulcan shuttle can. But no.
It's also weird that they show up and don't talk to Spock at all. But I guess
we got to keep at least something canon.
That's
Daniel.
The one rule that the Discovery writers have adhered to.
Spock can't talk to Sarek.
No Spock and Sarek. That's the golden rule in Discovery.
I'm expecting Spock. Anything maybe else. Sarek will talk through Michael like a minor possession of Katra's. But they'll still say, like, no, guys, we didn't cross that line. They were not in the same room together.
Because the one canon rule that they totally, totally value.
Because I was, and again, it's fine, whatever. I'll ignore it. It's not fine, they'll ignore it. Is, you know, and Sarek's like, because I don't want to get the line wrong. But the paraphrase was, he did say this, but something like, oh, I love my son, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not what you're doing to me. Okay. I mean, okay, okay.
If only I could see him again. You know, Dad, he's here on the ship.
Because
literally, when Mom called us, we were in the same room together.
Because Sarek, and again, I'm not saying I don't believe him, because, you know, we can go back and watch the old TOS episodes in the movies, because we really don't have that much. We've sort of, you know, somewhat. But it seems to be that Sarek in this episode is saying it's Spock who has cut off communications, where it always seemed to me that it was, and maybe I'm
right,
wrong, it always seemed to me that Sarek was the one who's like, oh, you're
that's
joining
true.
Starfleet, you know, I don't want to talk to you. That's what I, but what do I
so
know?
So Spock was just using that as a defense when asked about it.
Yeah, so I don't know, but it was interesting. All right. That's all I'll say.
So Burnham touches the time crystal, shouldn't have done that, and we get a flash forward of bad things happening, some giant torpedoes lodged in the Enterprise hull. Quark's not there with Odo to defuse it. And so we don't really know what's going to happen.
Is it possible they were seeing when General Chang had the torpedo go through the saucer in Star Trek VI? Is that not? No. Okay.
This was a freaking big torpedo. Like, it looked like at least half the, like, a radius of the saucer big.
It was like a spike.
Yeah. So she's all depressed and.
Really?
You know.
Michael?
Yeah.
She's
always
so happy.
I
don't
know. Okay. So they got to depart, and as she reaches. You know, she takes the time crystal, and she experiences the flash. She, you know,
so,
and then she sees
so guys,
Leland saying goodbye.
We have to make sure, no matter what, nobody has any future visions. Because, you know, if you have a future vision, that's like cancer or something, you know. So we have to build a cage around the time crystal to avoid any, like, you know, if they had sort of, whatever, it's not that big of a deal. But they make it up as a problem, right? Oh, I can't have the cage around the time crystal or else we'll have visions, and like that's the worst thing in the world. And I'm like, can you just say the words temporal prime directive? No, okay, then why do we care, you know?
Although technically hasn't Jet Reno had visions, we just didn't see him because she was in the room.
No, she had them. She had the same exact vision.
Oh, Michael, that's right, that's right.
I mean, it's copyrighted,
so it's actually just, yeah, it's a very specific,
it's a vision. Verification, it's what's going to happen in the immediate future.
Yeah, we have two witnesses. That makes it admissible in time court.
By the way, in that scene, how does she understand the rules of the time crystal? Her and Stamets and Tilly.
Oh,
know
no,
how
it's super easy. When Boreth gave it to them, he had a pamphlet that's attached to it. Like, hey, well, you know, really glad with your purchase of a new time crystal. Here are the rules. Don't feed it after midnight.
Oh, no.
Don't get it wet. And, keep it in this level 3 containment field, or you will see visions of the future.
In this cosmic cube.
But then Michael has a different vision of the same future later on when she's on the bridge of the Enterprise, when she doesn't.
Oh, she has a time flashback, or, you know, it's like an LSD trip.
And technically, oh yeah, like it's overlapping with the events that are happening.
Yes, like literally.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, the monks told Pike if he took the crystal, his future was sealed, but Michael didn't take the crystal, so does that mean she can actually change the future? Because that doesn't really come up in any of this discussion.
I think the Klingons were BSing then. I don't think anybody understands the rules.
They're
of
like,
the
guys, no one's actually taken a Kyber crystal ever. What do we tell them? Oh, just tell them if they take the crystal, like, their future is sealed. No one will ever take the crystal after that. Guys, they took the crystal after that, so what are we going to do?
New rules.
I've made a huge mistake. New rules. Yeah.
Yeah. New rules. Let's start on a hologram of Kalis, because that's our new project.
Is this like soon in the Enterprise episode? Like, I guess genetics are over. Androids. Maybe I can.
Android. Kalis holograms. Okay, so we're back. Apparently, and don't forget, guys, we are never having holographic communications again.
Not just in the Enterprise.
There's only so many minutes in this episode, but we got to point that out.
Just not on the Enterprise. Ever.
No, not on the Enterprise.
They're
going to
look at the camera and be like, never again.
I'm surprised they didn't, in the flashback where they were reminding us all the things that had happened, didn't have that shot of Pike telling Number One, and just tear out this whole system. I don't want no more holograms. They're not worth it.
Somebody gets paid. Somebody's job it is to do this.
To not screw over canon as little as possible.
To write the line. Somebody got paid money to write the line, we will never have holographic technology ever. And I imagine a scenario going down like this. Listen, we want Michael to have an emotional goodbye with Sarek and Amanda. How do we get them on the ship?
Right.
We can have this scene.
It's the exact same thing of DS9. Where they invented
the
telepresence, you're on the bridge, and then they never use it again because you can't tell that they're a hologram. It's too good.
I'm just saying, somebody at that point was like, no, let's not include that scene, but we definitely have to have the line, we will never have holograms on this ship, ever. And it's like, come on, man, what is the point of this? Why are we doing this? It's so silly to me.
I got nothing.
All right, so we're trying to figure stuff out. The computer indicates that the, 3, 2, 1, everyone hold their breath, and nothing happened. The auto-destruct failed.
I was a little...
Again.
I was a little sad. I mean, not... Whatever. Again, I'm moving on. But, there wasn't, a little kind of, destruct code 2005. I mean, it takes too long. It's too long of a thing to do.
Well, they did the hand,
The hand thing. What's the hand thing? But anyway, okay.
Look, if we've learned anything, is Starfleet is not uniform. All ships do their things their own way because...
And how long do you have to be on a ship before you change uniform? I wonder what the regulation is on that,
Yeah, well...
DS9 has had some issues of how long before you put the jumpsuit on. But
so the Spear Data's... Oh, guys, the Spear Data merged with Discovery. How did we not see this coming? And it's, apparently...
It should have been pretty obvious.
Is the Spear Data trying to get to Control, and Control is trying to get to the Spear Data? Are they star-crossed lovers? Is that what's going on?
I guess. I mean, I'm not going to. But I guess I should really rewatch the Spear episode. Because, again, I'm not sure. Because it was...
Apparently it all hinges on the Spear episode. I need to watch that again, too.
Because what struck me about that episode, and it's been a while, or 4 weeks, possibly, that it was sort of this amazing life form, or, amazing as... can be, and it was sort of like an inner light thing of I'm about to die, boom, here's my life, and it's kind of a sweet thing, but apparently it's not. Apparently it's a terrible thing, because this is just causing havoc. And so it is, why does it protect itself? Because, if it's a protect itself because, we want to save our culture and our learning, that's good, right? It's a good, positive thing. But, at what
cost?
But
at the sake of all sentient life in the galaxy, it's...
And how does knowledge... Do I need that explained? Maybe I'm going to say yes. Do I need it explained what knowledge it has that would make an artificial intelligence sentient? Or is it just because we said so?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, if it's not sentient itself. Because I think the only thing that's been explained to us about the Sphere's data's motivation is that it's self-preservation of, that's the only thing it's concerned about. Mm-hmm. That's what happens at the end of that episode. And every time it seems to have agency or do something, it's to keep itself safe. Mm-hmm. So I was not surprised when nothing happened, when they were 3, 2, 1. It's like,
yeah,
okay,
I was not surprised at all.
Come on, you idiots. Get a help.
I'd be more surprised if the Discovery warped away and they're like, ah, crap.
You mean mushroomed away?
Yeah.
Technically can't do that without
Stamets, yeah.
Yeah.
So Michael gets her vision of the future, basically of Leland coming in and gunning everybody down. Where has that happened before? You're standing on a bridge and you have a 13-second vision of an enemy gunning down everyone in the crew, and then you have to activate the Omega-13 to make sure it doesn't happen again. Galaxy Quest, guys.
Well, I just
this
think
is
also,
the plot of Galaxy Quest.
Didn't that happen
Quest
in the Harry
now.
Mudd episode?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I got.
Have they not put it, like,
well.
Come on. What's her name? Non? Come on now. Put some security on the bridge, for God's sakes. I don't know.
Yeah, so... Okay, so we forget that plan. Guys, failed plan. Let's just not put another notch on the failed plan wall because it's too embarrassing at this point. So now we got to come up with our new plan, and our new plan is we're going to build a time suit and just take the entire Discovery. We're just, you know, if we can't destroy it here, let's just remove it from the galactic equation.
No, and I think I understood it, but my wife did have me stop and ask me to explain what the plan was. Because she's like, wait, how are they going to get everyone and the ship? And I was like, okay, well, the way I understand it is that they're going to get the suit, and then they'll be in the Discovery, and the suit will go, and the ship will follow them. So her question was, I think it's a valid question, why can't she be on the ship wearing the suit? And I was like, I don't know. That's a good question.
Because that's not how time travel works, Philip, obviously.
I was like, you got me on that one. I got it.
The real answer is so that we can have an exciting, thrilling space chase sequence in the next
episode.
Where
Michael disappears and Discovery's lost.
You know, sorry, Dad. I thought the exciting space chase sequence battle was going to take place at this episode. That's what I was promised in last episode.
Oh, no.
Well,
did
you all understand, and again, I'm not trying, this isn't a complaint, it's just an actual question. Did you all understand why there's 50 million shuttles that are going to be fighters, guess?
Seems like a lot of them were like worker bees, but yeah, there were a sure lot of them. Like, not since Star Trek Beyond and swarm ships have we seen so many ships on screen at the same time.
I mean, I didn't understand, because I guess I got confused. I only watched this episode once. But it's something like, oh, you know, we need to tactical up all our shuttles or something. And number one's like, I already did that. And I was like, what? I mean, I don't know what that means. Like, I literally don't know what that means. Like, they put phasers on the worker bees? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like type 2 phasers. They strap them to the little pincers.
Are they on
stun, like,
or
pew,
kill?
Pew.
Or, you know. Oh, that'd be funny if they actually
had, you know. Yeah. But yeah, so they figure out that Michael must be the Red Angel.
Are you happy now, Daniel? That's why it was 100% Michael, because it was 100% yes. Michael the whole time. Though, is this like a double bluff? Does that count as us still calling it? They're like, we thought it was Michael, but it's not. It was her mom. No, it's Michael. And we're like, well, that's what we thought in the first place. So, okay, so we're technically right
there.
Well,
and I think, didn't I predict that? I mean, we knew that she was the Red Angel at this point, but I was thinking that she was the one who did the signals. Mm-hmm. I mean, once the mother said, I don't know anything about the signals, I'm like, oh, well, then Michael's going to become the Red Angel and she's going to do the signals, because that's literally the only place the writers have left to go. So,
yeah. And there is, and I'll admit, I don't know how logical in the world it is. I would get the reflex of Captain Pike and Michael, and honestly a lot of the characters. And I don't like to side with, like, evil Georgiou. But there is a whole lot of, like, what should we do next? Oh, we'll just wait for the signals to tell us. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really a strategy. Like, there's a whole lot of, like...
Although Georgiou's plan was to blow up a sun to get the necessary energy, and everyone looked at her like, no, we're not doing
though,
that.
Though, I get that, like, I mean, and I don't... Science, you know, someone science me on this. But I'm like, surely space is big. There has to be a star that you could still explode that isn't inhabited. I don't know how big that explosion is, so maybe it is like a crazy explosion.
But it would take us forever to get there, Philip. We can't instantaneously bring our ship any... Oh, wait, never mind.
So that's why I was a little like, what's that? Space is big. Mind-numbingly big. I mean, you may think it's a long way to the chemist shop. Anyway.
What amazes me now is that they've had the designs for a time machine for like 20 years... And it only now occurs to them to build another one.
But now
one.
They actually know it's when, like, lightning will strike, now that they have the time crystal.
You would have still tried. You would have still just tried to do it. They don't just
get, if there was a Klingon Section 31, they could have stole the suit design, gone to Time Crystal Planet, and then ruled the galaxy.
Yes.
Many
well,
Klingon spies died to bring us this information.
So anyway, we're weaponizing and we're building, and we go and visit Tilly's friend on the planet. Oh God, it begins with an X.
Does it?
Zalhi. We'll go with that.
Xanadu.
And Xanadu. And Queen Poe, who blinks her eyes in a weird way.
And eats ice cream. Totally professional.
And she's also coming on this wacky ride, which is kind of cool because she's an interesting character. I like her. And she's charging up the bio-neural battery because that thing sure looked organic, but that was kind of cool. And so we have this awesome, really casual meeting of a queen scene where Pike's really out of his element, but he's just kind of rolling with it.
He's been rolling for it the whole season. You know, Pike.
That's true.
Pike is,
he really is. And soon he'll always be rolling with it. Hey, guys. Oh, wait. No, too soon.
He'll always be. He's Captain Christopher Flexible Pike. You know, ship run on mushrooms. Ice cream eating queen. You know what? Sure, guys. Whatevs. I'm here for all this.
He's okay. Captain Casual.
Okay. We're going to fast forward a little bit because we're in Act Two now, guys.
I didn't get, and again, because I only watched it once. But there's a line of, like, where Tilly's like, oh, I guess this is goodbye. And she's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. But, like, I didn't get what she was saying. Like, she's just staying. Like, is she going to the future with the ship?
I think she's basically like, I would need to ensure that this works.
Well, I get that.
Because my planet is threatened just like any other planet.
But, like, what's she doing? I guess I didn't understand, like... Well, what? She doesn't have to... You don't have to kick her to the planet the second. I mean, she can stay on the ship for 2 seconds. I mean, what is she... risking?
I don't know.
Okay. I was a little confused about, but, like, it seemed like I was supposed to be emotionally involved. I was like, I don't get what's happening. But anyway.
Yeah, so they're hoping they end up in the future in Terra Elysium. A lot of question marks, considering this is a new time crystal and a new time suit. So there's really no reason it should be anchored to that point at all, but...
Also, another
it could work.
Plot question. Sorry, me in the front row. Is there any reason...
Yes, Mr. Gilfus, yes.
And again...
I know your name now. You've said so many things.
This is a legitimate question. I'm not just... Is there any reason why it has to be the future? Is there any reason why it can't be the distant past? Because it always seems like, oh, we have to send it to the future. I'm like, it goes two ways.
Because fans don't like prequels, Philip.
Well, I mean, you could send it to the beginning of the universe. I mean, that'll explode.
Well, I think, I'm sure
this ship won't survive the creation of the universe, Philip.
Good.
I mean, not that they really probably thought about this, but I'm sure the idea is that it's much safer to go to the future. You can't ruin the future because you can always change it. If you go to the past and step on the wrong thing...
Daniel, we broke a crystal. We can't change the future anymore.
Pike can't change the future.
Oh, it's just a Pike corollary. Okay.
Well, you know, the pamphlet the Norks gave us is really vague on that. Like, I thought it was a two-sided sheet, but it wasn't.
Half of
it's
an Andorian. I don't even know.
So, yeah, apparently, yeah, everyone doesn't really like the plan, because Tyler doesn't like the plan, sure Joe doesn't like the plan. A lot of people don't like this plan.
I do love the Tyler scene, because it's sort of like, oh, God, we're going to do this scene, but whatever. So we have the Michael.
Well, no, obviously Tyler can't stay on the ship, because he's going to show up in TOS in a couple of years. Oh, wait, no, that's Spock.
No. He's Section 31 spinoff. But anyway, that's where he's
that's right.
You know, are you going to do this? And he's like, I'd like to say yes, but I have my own spinoff. So, and I'm not really committed to this relationship, actually, now that I think about it. So I'm going to say no.
I think I left my oven on.
Yeah. Can I say no? Is that right? And then my wife was like, oh, now they're going to kiss. And then they kissed. And so there you go.
So where did he go? Did he go to get the Klingons?
No, he just said, I have to stay here to make sure this doesn't happen again in case you fail. That's how much faith he has in Michael's plan.
I'm talking about at the end when he's talking to Pike and he says, do you trust me? Oh. I need to leave now.
We won't know until season 2 of the Section 31 show is over until what's going to happen there. Yeah,
I'll admit, and again, maybe I was confused about that scene because I didn't remember what transporter pad they were on. I couldn't figure out who's going where. I'm like, isn't he on the Enterprise? Why is he beaming? But I guess they were on the Discovery beaming back to the Enterprise. Because I swear there was an Enterprise scene right before that. So I was a little thrown off about things.
Probably.
Hey, that scene, real quick. I know we're jumping, but that scene. When what the hell was up with the
wink?
Conversation between Georgiou and Pike? She goes, I'm from the Terran Empire in your mirror universe. He goes, what? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
It's like, what mirror universe? Like, why did we need to know that he knew that she knew that he knew?
Why did she say it? Why did he know? Why does it matter? What the hell was that about? Did you guys have any idea? Like, did that make sense to you, or am I stupid?
You can ask a dumb question. Have they actually said the word mirror universe before?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in season one they said we're in a mirror universe.
Okay, because it seems odd that she would call it that. But anyway, I'll go with it. But also, if she's telling... it seems weird that if she's telling him, she's like, I'm a Terran. Yes, we're all Terrans in this room.
Yeah. That's like, I'm a human from your other universe. Okay, that means nothing. Go away.
Bye-bye. I'm from the mirror universe. I don't know. I mean, I'm criticizing, but, you know, just drop a sentence. It's not needed. You know, it doesn't do anything.
Both times I watched the episode, I just don't understand the purpose of that exchange at all. It's completely lost on me.
I guess it was like, oh, we need to, since we're never going to see Pike again, we need to let him know everything. So let's tell him. I was like, I don't think that was a mystery that needed to be solved. I mean, who gives a crap that he needed to know that? But okay.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're all of a sudden a lot of people are deciding to stay on the ship, which seems like
I'd be grateful turn of events. If you give the word.
Yeah. So we have Spock, Saru, Stamets, Reno, Oakeson.
It's everyone on the bridge. It's the entire bridge crew.
Bryce, Reyes, Nelson, and Tyler. And then Tyler eventually leaves.
Tyler for 3 seconds, and then he's like,
oh, I thought there was going to be refreshments here. Sorry, I've got to.
And does that mean, is Jet Reno staying? Oh, yeah, Reno. I see your name. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I do like how they told Lieutenant Blondie, I know she has a name, I apologize, you know, like, oh, we like how you filled in for Computer Lady. I'm like, yes. It almost feels like she's still here.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yes. That was a little on the nose. Like, it's like the first time we've mentioned you, and obviously you're the actress who played her, and I don't know why, but sure.
That,
maybe.
That whole scene.
Is that how contracts work now?
She must have signed, you know, in all seriousness, she's probably signed a 3-year contract, and then, like, had, like, some medical issue with the makeup. Like a medical issue, like the doctor said you can't do this or you're just going to have hives or something. And they're like, well, shit, we can't fire her. We don't want to pay her out her contract. So we have to keep her on the show for 2 more years and just, I don't know, fine. You're just playing the same character but without makeup.
That's basically what's happening right now.
That whole sequence on the bridge when Pike is like saying his goodbyes. And
apparently we have a salute now in the Starfleet, which is stand at attention.
It's actually at ease. It's an at ease, but yes.
But yeah, they were pretty attentional at ease, but I know what you mean.
And it's like, I'll stand, and then I'll stand back at you.
Yeah. We're not. It's like, you really want a salute, don't you, sir? Yes, but it's not our way. what were you saying, though, Daniel, about that?
I was just going to say, that whole speech, it really went downhill pretty quickly because he was like, you know, he was like, hey, you're great and you're great. And then he's like, Robo Lady's the same. And then the next two people just got two, like, you guys are both cool. And then he talks to Michael for 5 minutes. And it's like,
and Michael,
no wonder
there are no words, but let me share some words.
Yeah. There's no wonder this lady has an ego trip. Jeez.
I'll miss you most of all, Scarecrow.
We've literally had episodes where people are saying it's all about you. But we can't quite. What, you know, Saru can't sit in the captain's chair just yet, guys.
Did you guys, man. Like, okay, in the world, because obviously I don't have commercials, but in the world where there are commercials, that cut is 100% makes sense. In the world in which streaming is done and it was made for this exact purpose, that cut makes zero sense. Like, who's going to be the next captain? Blackout, come back. So, you're going to be captain? I don't think we should discuss that right now. Well, okay. Yeah. You know, tick.
It also makes me really nervous because it seems to be implying that Saru thinks Michael should be the captain. And, oh God, no. Anything but that. No, no, no. Let Saru please be the captain.
Although, if she has to stay on the bridge, that's kind of a good thing because then she doesn't get in as much trouble. But, yeah. No, I agree.
That's where she performs her mutinies.
Oh. Guys, that was a year, maybe two ago. Like,
I don't even remember season one, honestly.
Okay, so the Enterprise, you know, is there again. You know, we're ready.
Well, do we want to, you know, talk about the bridge?
I mean, the bridge looks pretty cool. I mean, we know it's going to look different. the view screen's giant because that's just how they roll. But
yeah,
it looked nice. I mean, I've seen a lot of posts where people have done comparison shots and of like the corridors and the bridge and the meeting room. And I mean, you can definitely tell like they're going for the Enterprise. It's not like, what ship is this? And I think they did a good job with it.
No, I mean, well, it's one of the things I don't care that much. I mean, like, as long as you sort of get the scheme, the color scheme and the color and the structure, and that's all they really went for. It's like, we're going to do our own thing. You know, this is the Kelvin Discovery universe. And I mean, I'm not saying that derogatory, I'm saying design-wise. But, you know, it's a circle, there's a rail, there's orange, the chair looks like, you know, what more do you want from us? I mean, there's like 500 more people on the bridge than there usually is.
As long as you walk on the bridge and you hear the beep,
exactly,
you know, like the Enterprise, like, then you're good.
But then...
And the computer starts doing something, it's like, working.
Well, the thing is, they have the voice, the same Discovery voice, and it's kind of like, oh, that's not Majel Barrett. Maybe they made an upgrade in 10 years, I guess. Or downgrade, possibly, because like you said, it does sound a little different. But anyway...
Well, when they ripped out the holograms, that's what lost the voice as well. So
the and again, I'll take it in stride. It's just one of those things, like, I know there's not writing for me, but when George was like, oh, purple or red, oh, it looks stupid, I'm like, I don't need this, honestly. I don't know why we need the comments, you know.
I
don't know why Giorgio's here at all. I thought the bridge looked fine. What I kind of liked was on the conference room desk. They had that silly, like, tri-screen.
Tri-screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good. I mean, again, you can tell, obviously, people who love Star Trek made this series, and, you know, it may not be what everybody likes, but when it comes to the Enterprise, they're going to do it well, because, you know, that's just what these people are. And
In the same vein, I really liked all the exterior shots of the Enterprise as well. I think it's a really solid representation of what we've known before, and it's like, that's sort of,
and we're gonna see,
like,
it kick ass next week, which is gonna be great. Yeah. So
maybe the torpedo noise,
and maybe, yeah, maybe all next season, who knows, we'll see what happens.
So we're calling the stations, red alert, you know, bad guys are almost here, and apparently they're gonna come from all sides, because that's kind of how that works, I guess,
because as we all know, space, two directions.
Yeah. And they're surrounded, completely surrounded. unless you go
up or down.
But, you know, maybe we haven't learned the three-dimensional thinking in Starfleet training.
When the Enterprise comes out of warp, they're like right on top of them, and it's like,
I'd be like, "Geez, Enterprise, you're a little close there.
Slow your roll, man." That's obviously just a nitpick, cuz whatever, that's fine, but it's just like, oof, right there. It's like, I didn't know they were so precise. Like, they know exactly where they're going there.
And I thought it would have been cooler if all of the Leland ships pop in that circle, and then the ones who are, like, they're all facing the same way, and then they rotate. Like, that would be cool.
Creepy.
But the fact that they kind of zipped in already facing inwards, that makes me think, well, if they're all coming from the same direction, how are they appearing to now come from, like, closing in the circle? But that's...
I actually thought it would have been a cooler visual if all 30 ships exited warp at the same exact moment.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Because they do it, like, staggered, and it's like, no, this is all controlled by one being, you would assume. So it's just, boom, like, this is just a wall of ships.
Right, and that precision that humans usually don't do would be kind of scary.
That would be cool.
So we get off to last part, our favorite scene, you know... Jojo cheerfully remarks, you know, more fun to come if they survived. Pike wishes her luck and remarks to Tyler that he's glad to have him on the same side, too. Hal asks if that means he trusts him, because apparently we got to still drive that point home. And Pike wonders why he asked. Tyler replies something he had to do. They'd have to leave before the battle began. Jojo activates the transporter and then confesses to Pike that she was Terran from the Mirror Universe. Mirror what? Replied Pike. And with a conspiratorial wink.
Question, and again, because I forgot. That's my answer. I forgot. The Admiral was on the Enterprise? Like, I know she was on the Enterprise this episode.
When the Enterprise showed up. Yeah, she's always been on the Enterprise. She's captaining it in this whole sequence while Pike is gone.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just forgot that. I was like, oh, she's here because of all the characters are here. Yeah. I got it.
So Detmer communicates to all the ships that Leland Controls' fleet has arrived. Pike steps onto his bridge, Number One reports that more ships are arriving. Burnham can see that the fleet has surrounded them in two dimensions. And everyone's getting ready. And Saru says, prepare for battle. And his evil battle spikes come out. And I'm
sorry, that'd be cool. I don't know. It's a nitpick. Maybe it's more than that. The whole prepare for battle. Mike, it's called Red Alert to Battle Stations. This isn't... Don't OTT this. You know, it's like, prepare for battle. Yeah,
he's only saying that because we're just about to hit the end of the episode. And that's why you land on a high note.
It's just very melodramatic first, you know, commander. You know, just Red Alert or Battle Stations. We don't need to, you know.
Oh, I will say a line I'd forgotten about, but I was just remembering, is when Poe shuts down Zhou. Like, Zhou's all like...
The no-snark outlaw.
Yeah, and she's like, you know, the funny thing about being the queen of the most politically relevant planet in the galaxy is I don't have to listen to any snark. I made it an actual law.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't know why Georgia was even there. What is she doing? I don't like
contributing.
She's not contributing in any way. She's just there.
Comic
to be a
relief,
bad
Daniel. She's like Worf.
I mean, maybe that's gonna be the best thing about the spinoff is that Ash and Georgia leave the Discovery show.
I hate her. I'm sorry. I hate Mirror Georgiou. I would love regular Georgiou. Mirror Georgiou is just pointless, it feels like, sometimes.
Yeah, so we're about to get into part two next week, as we'll see the actual battle we thought we were getting this week, as it's been a lot of setup. I want to hear predictions for the end of season two.
Well, like, just for a second... Because you skipped the goodbyes. You know, oh, we all chose to go with Michael, and so we all... And I know, true. I'm saying it in a derisive tone. I don't mean it that way. And so we get all these sort of character moments, which is fun.
That's true. Like, when we're... Like, Saru takes his knife, and... Are you talking about the evacuation moments?
No, no,
or like
no.
The
like,
moments?
You know, everyone's writing their goodbye letters because we're all going to die, you know?
Oh, right.
And so, you know, presumably... Like, Stamets is writing to his sibling. I forget if it was a brother or sister. I think it was his brother. Not to Culber, but anyway, we'll skip that for a moment. But anyway, and then Dittmer. I guess this is the because I can see both arguments. The argument is you know she's doing her goodbye message, and so but like there's no context with it, so I was like, I don't know who she's talking about. But then the argument is, well, she has a life. We don't need to tell you everything in the next hour. So I don't know. But it was just interesting they had all this sort of like everyone's writing their little goodbye message, I'm never coming back. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, except for Spock. I don't think we saw Spock doing a goodbye letter, but...
Spock also doesn't have a lot to do. He just kind
of... I still don't know why Spock is going. Like,
nope.
There's really no reason except for moral support of his sister.
I actually don't know why anybody's going.
I also want to know is how many more people besides the bridge crew? Because if Saru is, like, telling everyone, like, all hands, how many hands stayed? Because is it just the bridge crew running the entire ship?
Because they didn't, I mean, of course they're not going. Anyway.
I mean, are they cutting down their extra budget a lot in season three? Is that what's happening?
There was no line. And again, this is whatever, nitpick. Like, at least in Star Trek III, there's, like, I fully ultimated her, Captain. You know, there's no like, yes, yeah, six people can now do this ship. I'm like, how?
And none of them are in engineering?
Well, there's...
He's the only engineer that doesn't go to engineering.
Well, they have both their engineers, so it's okay.
That's true.
They have Stamets and they have, what's her name?
Jet.
I can't remember her name.
Jet,
yeah. So they do have two people in engineering, then the six people on the bridge.
Right.
And Michael, who will be out in space.
Right. For some reason.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So
predictions. We can do predictions. Two options here.
Right.
Option A, okay, which is the best option, is that they send Discovery into the future and leave it there.
Right. The now, battle is to keep them alive enough to go into the future.
And they leave the ship there. That's the best option.
The Calypso scenario.
The Calypso scenario.
So we're talking about the end of this next episode, right?
Right.
Or are you saying for season three?
No, you wanted to hear predictions for the end of next episode.
But you're saying leave it. Where's the crew then?
I don't know. They'll probably come. I would assume they would come back. But
so
maybe
come
if
back
bold,
with the time. So maybe that's why they didn't build the time stuff into the ship. They built it into the suit so that they could all go back. They all hug and then, you know, go
to the power of family. They Care Bear stare.
We're a family, guys. Let's go.
They'll just hold on real tight.
Dun, dun, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy, part one ending. Dun, dun, you know. Dun, 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 dun. Saru's holding out his hoof arm, you know.
Yeah, so Michael makes the wormhole and they all jump through it, City on the Edge of the Forever style.
That's probably the best option for them to do it.
Okay.
Almost certainly what's going
the
to happen...
more likely is...
is they're going to go into the future and find some magical, amazing solution, or somebody's going to come up with some idea.
The
and
Uber
everything,
signal.
If they're going to come back...
The eighth signal, guys.
Yeah. And everything's going to be just fine.
I feel like they're going to be stranded in the future. Like, that's how it's going to end. I don't know how to make that exciting, but that's what's going to happen.
I'm okay with that, though, because think about it.
Except there's a spot problem.
It's kind of a void. It's like a void. Well, yeah, that's a... although, I'm still saying, there's a one-episode window for him to get off
the
ship.
It's true. Michael will be like, no, one of us should live. And she like
and
beams
shoves
him
out an airlock
at the last second, you know, to the Enterprise. And then the Discovery. And then they... Oh, where are we, guys? I don't know.
I bet... okay, here's a prediction. I'm thinking, you know, the Enterprise is going to get struck by that torpedo and damage, and Spock is going to be the one who has to come back over to fix it.
Or
and that gets
Spock
him off
is
the
torpedo.
Okay.
Michael shoves Spock into torpedo. If I'm going to be right, guys, you're going to be owing money. And she fires him to the Enterprise. And then the Discovery mushrooms out.
You know, the more you talk, the more plausible it actually sounds.
Though I like,
okay, so,
I like...
So, Spock torpedo, Spock.
Spock pedo.
Hey, here's...
So,
here's
we obviously can't beam you over, so how are we going to get you back over there, Spock?
Look, guys, this isn't the first time Spock's been in a torpedo. I don't know why it's so funny.
Well, it technically is the first time. Later will be another time, but...
Also, what if
how was it riding in a torpedo, Spock? I don't know. I could live or die with it, you know.
what if Spock had to pick between Michael and Pike? I have to save one. And he saves Pike.
Right.
And that guilt is the reason we never, ever, ever hear about Michael. Michael gets stranded in the future forever.
Well, she
ever,
disappears,
ever.
Right? That's all we know.
Right.
Or like Spock would know, right?
Something like that would work. Obviously, we're not at the end of Discovery, so that's not what's going to happen. But at least something like that would fit within the timeline.
That's a possibility.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm thinking, I agree with both of you. I think the end of this is, you know, they're going to be in the future. I'm going to say they're... Either one of two things. Either they're in the future, but not in the mom's time, and they don't know where to go. Or they go to the mom's time, and then they're trying to get back. But when trying to get back, they end up in some unknown place,
so,
time.
How?
I don't think they're going to have the mom resource.
Where did... how far in time did mom go?
Like 900 years.
How far is Calypso?
A thousand years.
I think they're right around the same time. I thought we did the math on this already, and I think actually the Calypso's farther out.
That's what I'm saying.
But
they go Calypso time, which cue that musical cue.
They overshoot.
Yes, as will happen. And so I think Calypso.
I need to watch Calypso again because it's going to be really relevant
next
week.
That's what I'm saying.
Guys.
Calypso.
You need to watch Calypso
is like
again.
A rare, super rare. Between Discovery episode, because, you know, there's no way to do those now. But anyway, it'll be like, oh, let's go on a mission, the eight of us, and let's leave the ship here. Discovery, this is your... Did the Discovery say captain? But anyway, this is your captain speaking, you know, stay here while we go do stuff for a week. And then that's when What's-His-Face shows up and plays there for however long he's there, and then they come back. So that's my guess.
Yeah, Calypso is 1,000 years into the future.
And she's like 900 years.
I don't think she's far behind. Yeah.
I mean, in the grand scale, it's really close, but not
because and again, don't believe everything you read. I get it. But they're, you know, if it's stuck in the future, I have no idea if there's any other crossfield ships. It's the only other ship with the mushroom drive, right? So there, it's gone. It's disappeared. No more mushroom drive. We can't replicate it. That's why you never hear about it again. Michael's in the future. Again, I like your Daniel. You're throwing so guilt. Spock's overcome with guilt.
Yep.
In the last episode, he's like, I don't know if you do it in the last episode, but you have to. I don't know how you can make her disappear and then have a reaction, but I suppose you could if it's...
Well, you could have her... You know, you could have Spock show up on the Enterprise, and Spock's like, what are you here? And he's like, I had to, you know, choose. He's like, I will never speak of my sister again. I'm just kidding. No, I know he's not going to do that.
Shoehorn that in so hard, please.
You know, you could, I mean...
I have no sister.
You could see.
He's looking in the computer, and we see him backspacing her file, deleting it.
It's his file. It's his file. It says how many siblings, and it's 2.
Oh.
And he deletes it to 1.
And then he deletes it again.
He's like, he deletes it to 1, and then he pauses, and he kind of has this, like, well, if I'm here anyway. And then he's like...
He puts 0 asterisk, and then, like, I don't... What is 0. That supposed to mean? Anyway.
Or he's 0 and it makes it classified.
The thing is, like, we kind of, like, as Star Trek fans, we're looking at them to, like, fix the canon, but they're not going to do that. Like, that's not their motivation at this point. So we could
it's
say...
It's to tell
oh,
a good
send...
story, Daniel. Why can't you see that?
Yes. They're very, very keen on that. So, yeah, you could send Discovery into the future. You could do this stuff with Spock. I imagine none of this is what's going to happen. We're somehow going to have a reset at the end of next episode, very similar to what we got in season 1 to season 2, and then a tease of something from Star Trek that we've seen before.
Are we really getting the anthology series we didn't know we were getting, but it's actually loosely framed in the
Discovery
USS Discovery?
Is a ghost
it's
ship.
The same
that's
ship
kind of what there. It feels like. We get our Mirror Universe series, we get our Time Travel Signal series, and then we're going to get our Future series.
Yeah. And our cartoon
Maybe.
Series.
Yeah, all man. Right, all right. So, next week we will be talking about part 2 of Such Sweet Sorrow.
The finale. All ant questions will be answered. All stories will be complete.
Everything's going to be completely tied up. I'm sure of it.
It will be such
sure
a satisfying feeling.
All you haters out there, you will be so much crow you'll be eating.
I cannot wait. It'll just be like, we're going to have so many signals in this episode. All the time travels will be solved.
Everyone
be
playing
amazing.
Single bingo is going to be able to check off those last 2, and that's going to be great.
You know, it actually turns out this is purgatory the whole time.
Oh, jeez.
That was.
And then, I'm making the call.
Into the chapel.
I'm making the call. They're going to show up in the future at the very end, and then who's going to step out of the shadows but Prime Lorca?
Oh,
boom.
Man.
I would like that.
I would
actually.
Be like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, guys, it's okay. I'm Prime. And then, boom, credits.
I'm glad you found
you have
me.
No idea what that.
And then one more season, Saru doesn't get to be captain.
So, all right. Well, Daniel, if someone wanted to find you to talk about your Lorca fanfic, where would they find you?
They could find me on Twitter at @oneofdan. That's the number one, not the word, as in one episode left.
And Philip, if someone would talk to you about the upcoming technical manual for the Crossfield class, where would they find you?
Right. And there's actually this pretty cool part in the middle where you can extend sort of like a centerfold to connect to the TOS. Original Enterprise manual. It's actually pretty cool.
And is it called the Canon Conversion Tunnel?
It's called Unnecessary. But you can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant.
And someone can find me if they wanted to talk about Star Trek, Star Wars, or maybe this is going into Babylon 5 territory this next episode. Who knows what's going to happen? And they can find me on Twitter, Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see as we wrap up Discovery next week and then return to our regularly scheduled podcasting. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here, not in the 31st century yet on City Alpha 3.